say my name.
Just a game. It's a religion. Costa Vapolius and Stephen Hindle take a look at the week that was and what's coming for your Montreal Canadiens. Welcome to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network.
And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup.
Goddamn right.
Everybody, and welcome to your first edition of Breaking Habs Radio right here on HCW2, that's Hockey This Week. I am your host, Costa Papoulias, and we are just apt to get this show off and running. We want to thank everybody who's joining us tonight from wherever you're listening from, and it's my pleasure right now to introduce my partner in crime, your co-host, Mr. Stephen Hindle. Steve, how you doing?
Very good. Thank you very, very much for bringing me on board to create this havoc with you on Breaking Habs Radio. Excited to be a part of it and really looking forward to, well, a long spring and an early summer filled with hockey.
Oh, yeah. We had an absolutely fantastic regular season with the Montreal Canadiens, leading the Atlantic Division, second in the conference, getting a first-round matchup against the Ottawa Senators, and I think that's where everything fell off the boat.
50 wins in the regular season. Well, let's call it 51 now if you want to include Game 1, where the Montreal Canadiens obviously decided to give themselves a home ice advantage head start, which they earned through that excellent regular season. And of course, well, let's be honest, the drive for 25 isn't just alive, it's on fire, blazing hot, and it started with a bang.
Yeah, let's talk about Game 1, just to kick it off, Steve, because last night's game, there was all kinds of drama. You know, you go into that game, you have the story about Andrew the Hamburger Hammond, and, you know, is he going to be able to quell the Montreal Canadiens offense? And then you've got everything that goes on the ice, a second period that was about as crazy as they can possibly get. And then, lo and behold, the third period, a skirmish at the end, coaches making stupid comments. It was like a whole playoff series wrapped into one.
Very quickly, it escalated, and the best part about that was, just like a normal McDonald's hamburger, it left you feeling hollow and empty. Well, that's what Andrew Hammond was doing for the Ottawa Senators with his performance. 4 goals allowed, multiple posts hit by the Montreal Canadiens en route to putting 39 shots on the Ottawa tender. And, of course, what they really did was shake his confidence early and often. Yes, the Ottawa Senators did get the break early on in the first period, courtesy of one Andrei Markov, who, perhaps the veteran of the bunch, showing, you could say, playoff opening night jitters, putting his own puck past Carey Price. But after that, things changed. The second period was the lightning rod and spark plug of exactly what hockey fans are looking for and hoping for in playoff hockey, and there it was in the second period.
I think a lot of people were more worried about the series in 2013, and of course, this version of the Ottawa Senators and the version that was playing in 2013, very, very different. different types of personalities, all kinds of different, you know, players on the team. You look at the rookies this year, and especially a guy like Mark Stone, who absolutely turned up in the last 2 months of the season for the Senators, and he changes the whole dynamic of what this team looks like. And I don't know about you, but last night I had that nervous feeling going into the game that something was going to go horribly wrong. Of course, you referenced the Markov own goal, and that sort of got us all worried. And lo and behold, the Montreal Canadiens respond with a bunch of goals, and not necessarily from the usual suspects.
Well, that was the best part, wasn't it? Marc Bergevin looking like, I guess you could say, the ace in the deck instead of the Joker after what he was being considered for those moves during the regular season. Not many fans created for Torrey Mitchell, Brian Flynn, Jeff Petrie, and Devontae Smith-Pelly. But lo and behold, Game 1 brings them right out of the fold. Everything that Bergevin was looking for in those transactions around the deadline, he saw. And you know what? Let's turn it right back to Mark Stone. You were talking about him. Well, that is the crucial point of what was an explosive second period that saw six goals scored in what was a matter of only just under 10 minutes. I think it was 9.5 minutes, six goals scored. The Montreal Canadiens, of course, potting two within 15 seconds. But that was only the beginning, is only minutes later P.K. Subban would certainly set the tone for what is going to be a continuously climactic series.
Well, let's look at that incident for a minute, because it was a pivotal part of the game, whether you want to believe that or not. P.K. Subban getting 5 minutes and a game misconduct for a hack on Mark Stone. Popular opinion out there is that Stone tried to sell it to the referees and did an awesome job. Today we learn he has what's called a microfracture. Now, you went into the medical lexicon, and the word microfracture means?
According to no one, nowhere, nothing, because it doesn't really exist in medical jargon. Not to say that a microfracture isn't perhaps something we would call a small break, but you nor I are doctors, and obviously the one thing that we can say is that what we saw last night in the incident, in the slash, was certainly a direct contact in a very sensitive part of a hockey player's body.
Sure, it was groin.
Well, listen, above the gloves and below the elbows is prime area. Now, guys have been asked to wear protective padding and other elements to help them, you know, avoid these hard slashes. Longer gloves were once upon a time a thing, but the short cuffs and the way that the game is now, everybody leaves themselves exposed to this. Was the slash Hextallian? No, I don't think we would go there. But I have to say that there was perhaps a smidge of a message in it. And yes, Mark Stone sold it. Unfortunately, the ref's decision to immediately jump at a five-minute major, though perhaps the right call in how he addressed it and how he saw it, that was the lightning bolt that hit the dry bush in the desert and set the forest ablaze.
Well, today on mainstream radio, Carey Fraser, who, of course, joins Paul Cuthbert every so often on Hockey This Week, he referenced the fact that he would have liked to have seen Steve Cazzari chase down Mark Stone and take a look at his arm to see whether or not there's some kind of a contusion, something to that effect, to try to, like, show that there was an actual injury there, because the injury was assumed.
Well, I don't think that, you know, that's a wonderful preposition on behalf of a former referee, Carey Fraser. But here's the thing. If he is injured, he's got to go right on out, and he's got to get medical attention. Now, my problem goes into the rest of the game that transpired. Not only did Mark Stone return, but there we saw him in the final minute of the game in the middle of a scrum that forced Montreal Canadiens hometown hero of the day, Torrey Mitchell, to step in and end it at the very end of the game. Now, I think it was just a situation of, you know, if he was hurt, he wasn't hurt that bad. They numbed it up. They did whatever they had to do on the medical training side of things to get him back out there. Maybe he's not going to make it into game two or three, or maybe he's more injured than we've been led to believe. But, you know, if we can skip through the game and just go right to the post-game comments, the tone has now been set, and it's rattled all the way down from the core to the top here. And the coaching staff and the team that is the Ottawa Senators are now reeling because of how all of this transpired.
Now, before we get to the post-game comments, let's reel back to the game for a minute and take a look at the fourth line's contribution, which was paramount in this hockey game. Much maligned since their acquisitions, especially Brian Flynn and Torrey Mitchell. You know, Devontae Smith-Pelly not playing on that line, but bringing a huge contribution as far as hits, ringing a shot off the goalpost, and really setting the tone early and often for the Montreal Canadiens to dominate that first period, despite the own goal by Markov. But talk a little bit about Flynn and Mitchell and the energy that they brought that we hadn't seen going into the end of the season, but now all of a sudden it's all there.
Well, that's a perfect segue, Coach, because the real thing here isn't just the energy that they brought, but the energy they were being fed by Brandon Prust. Over the last couple weeks of the regular season, these two have seen themselves go in and out of the lineup while trying to adjust to Michel Therrien's structure and his system. And what Brandon Prust has done, he's given them the pointers. Not only that, he's found chemistry with them to the point where they're fitting in. The effort paying off in spades last night. These three players did not exceed 13 minutes in ice time apiece. I believe that Smith Pelly and Torrey Mitchell each racked up in the neighborhood of 13, 13 and a half. Well, the man of the evening, Mr. Brian Flynn, scored the game winner and potted another couple of assists. His first career three-point game, right?
And the first star of the hockey game.
And, of course, the first star of the hockey game. Well, he played only 10 minutes and 17 seconds last night. The amazing part is that these guys were just terrifying the Ottawa Senators, while the Montreal Canadiens' top six, which many were afraid of, lay dormant.
Yeah, it was and you look at the top six, and let's start with David Desharnais. Despite the fact that he did do very well in the faceoff circle, his contribution was like nothing. He was invisible on the ice, as was P.A. Parenteau for the most part. Now, we found out today that P.A. Parenteau is dealing with an upper body injury, not taking part in practice. But
Wait. Can you mention to all of our wonderful listeners who was in his place during practice?
Oh, yes. Well, not necessarily in his place, but during line rushes today at practice, Max Pacioretty on the left wing with David Desharnais and Devontae Smith-Pelly restructuring that line again, getting them back together because they had a little bit of success before Pacioretty got hurt.
But we were talking about Desharnais, yeah, and his performance here. Now, Desharnais played 12 minutes and 7 seconds last night. He won 62% of his faceoffs, but one shot on goal, no offense generated, and obviously with the tilt in favor of the fourth line and the way that they were playing. Well, let's be honest, the third and fourth line, Lars Eller played himself into another solid playoff game, and of course scoring a very important goal for his team as well. It was just a matter of time before Therrien had guys who were going to step up for him. The problem going into the playoffs is that Desharnais is not a guy who does step up in the playoffs, so there was a lot of worry about how he was going to perform. The good news is that Devontae Smith-Pelly was ever so happy to throw his weight around and pull the little Desharnais along with him.
Now, looking at that, though, the matchup is Desharnais versus Mika Zibanejad of the Ottawa Senators, and you and I both agree that Zibanejad, more likely than not, is going to win this one-to-one.
Well, he got the third star last night, according to NHL.com, and now, you know, just to give you an idea, the guy did play 17 minutes. This is Mika Zibanejad for the Ottawa Senators. He potted a goal and an assist, and he was very effective, but outside of the two goals scored on the power play and the own goal potted by Andrei Markov on Carey Price, the Ottawa Senators were not threatening. And what that boiled down to was that the shift in balance in who was presenting the more dangerous threat in terms of third and fourth line instead of first and second, I think that was a big part of throwing off the Senators, and now they don't know who to focus on.
Yeah, that's true enough. Before we have to go to break, because we've got a couple of minutes left in this first segment of the show, and of course you are listening to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network, let's take a look at the whole non-suspension for P.K. Subban, the backlash from that, and also the comments made by Coach Dave Cameron, which to me was the reason why.
Well, I don't want to get too real time on you, my friend, but there was a slash in the Penguins-Rangers game tonight, and I'm sure Rangers and Penguins fans listening into the show just might know exactly what I'm talking about, but it's almost a mirror image in terms of what transpired. A two-handed slash, the hands up together in golf-type swing
with
format. With no slice, this made direct contact. Trust me, I don't know if he screamed four or not, but the guy he hit was screaming afterwards, right above the cuff on the wrist, and a dangerous clip at that. Did it result in 5 minutes in a game misconduct? No. So the precedent set in terms of suspensions with a stick and it being a determination of the referee's decision on ice, I personally can let that go in terms of how it transpired in game one, the on-ice call, just the impact it made on the ref and how he called it. That's fine. Moving forward, did it merit something beyond that? Not really, and especially because when you want to look back at P.K. Subban's history, he has only been suspended once, or excuse me, he's only had a game misconduct once prior in his career. When was that? 2 years ago, game three against, guess who? The Ottawa Senators in the first round of the playoffs. So it seems to me the Senators do get under P.K. Subban's skin, and he is trying to send a message, but you know he's going to have to remain a little bit more conservative when he goes hacking his way through game two.
Of course, it's playoff hockey, and you and I both know, having followed the Canadiens and the NHL for so many years, that these things happen on the ice, whether it's chirping and calling your mother names on the ice or whatever a person could come up with. And
I think it gets even worse than that.
And the hacks happen. And, you know, you talk about this microfracture to Mark Stone. Guys are going out there and blocking shots. They have all kinds of bruises on their legs and groins that are pulled.
Microfractures aplenty.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think too much was written into this. But to me, the biggest problem I had was the fact that there was no fine to Dave Cameron. In the past, we've seen coaches sound off on decisions made by referees, especially guys like Lindy Ruff, you know, who very often tries to get under the referee's skin and tries to make a point, despite the fact that he's going to get fined. And now Dave Cameron, it's his rookie season in the playoffs. I understand that it's his first playoff run. He is emotional. They're coming off the whole issue with assistant coach Reed passing away. It was an emotional game for their team as a whole. But you can't catch yourself being caught saying something like that and asking for vigilante justice.
Well, I think this stems right back to the slash and the call and the tempo of the game after the fact. It carried through post-game. Obviously, tempers were continuing to flare, and I'm sure they will into game two. But the NHL's decision to let everything fall where it may, I guess you could say, stands in their favor in that they are not escalating it by justifying anything the coach has said or that any of the players have said, because Stone called for a suspension saying there was intent. P.K. Subban scoffed at it. As a matter of fact, he complimented Dave Cameron and said how much he respects him. So you can see where it's going with this. The Canadians, for as much as the press built things up prior to puck drop on game one, seem to be even with the Ottawa Senators. As a matter of fact, the Montreal Canadiens with 110 points and 50 wins on the season were certainly the better. They may have lost the season series, but through the last couple seasons, they've got the experience. They were prepared. You saw it in game one. The Senators are not ready to stack up against the Habs.
Okay, quickly, before we go to break, do we see another solid game like that from the Canadiens and Senators, or do you think the Senators have an extra gear to bring?
There could be an extra gear to bring, but if Max Pacioretty comes back, that just can split the Ottawa Senators' focus further in twain, and they could be in big trouble come game two.
That went really quick.
That's what happens when you're having fun.
Yeah, no kidding. Anyways, of course, you're listening to Breaking Habs Radio right here on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. Coming back off the break, we'll be talking a little bit about not the Hamburglar, but definitely a farm, not Old McDonald's, but that of the Hamilton Bulldogs. They're trying to gear up and get into the playoffs. We'll talk about a little bit about that and a lot more right here on Breaking Habs. Stay with us.
We'll be back with more Breaking Habs Radio.
We here at Breaking Habs Radio take pride in our production work. Sometimes our voiceover auditions, though, don't exactly go as we plan.
Okay, welcome. Is there anything I can get you before we start? Glass of water?
You may
juice?
Dispense with the pleasantries.
Okay, great.
At the end of the road, turn round.
Okay, I'm going to stop you. The line is, at the end of the road, turn right.
That is what I said.
Terrific. So let's just try it again.
At the end of the road, turn round.
Let's just go forward. Okay, we're at page 5.
Page 5?
I'm sorry, page 7. We're at page 7.
I don't have a page 7. You have reached your destination.
Is there any way you could breathe a little quieter?
What do you mean quieter? This is how I breathe. Please take the third exit on the roundabout.
It's roundabout.
Correct. You should have seen his face when I told him I was his father. I told my son, who did not know that I was his father, that I was his father.
Yeah, and she, there's a twin sister involved.
Ah. Here it is.
Whoa. You know what? Let's move forward. That's fine.
Silence. Roundabout.
It's about being around.
Don't underestimate the power of the dark side.
Now, back to Breaking Heads Radio.
Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. I'm Costa Papoulias along with Steven Hindle. And it's time to get into a little bit of talk about our lovely farm team down in Hamilton, which is moving to St. John's and becoming the Ice Caps, and that being the Hamilton Bulldogs. They're in a bitter fight with the Toronto Marlies for the last playoff spot in the Western Conference. The Marlies holding a 3-point lead, an extra game in hand, and the Bulldogs are coming off a 5-3 win over the Oklahoma City Barons, that being the farm team of the Edmonton Oilers. Steve, we had the chance to go down and see the Bulldogs firsthand and enjoyed every minute of it. Of course, we were joined there for D-Skate night by a bunch of kids to take part in the program. But there were a lot of things that we saw. And going into these last two games against the Lake Erie Monsters this weekend, the Bulldogs are going to need a lot of help.
Well, let's just start right there. The Hamilton Bulldogs are currently sitting with 80 points. They have played 74 games this year, 34-28-12 on the year. And, yeah, they are trying to claw their way up past the Toronto Marlies. The Marlies have a 3-point advantage over them with a game in hand, but here's the difference. With two games left this Friday and Saturday against the Lake Erie Monsters, the Hamilton Bulldogs have an opportunity to grab four very important points.
The must-wins.
Against a team that is sitting last in their division. Now, the interesting part about this is the way that the Toronto Marlies schedule breaks down. Of course, they are playing, I got to pull this off the top of my head, I believe it's Rockford, Chicago, and Milwaukee.
Yes, sir.
Now, these teams, apart from Milwaukee, let's just put it this way, Rockford and Chicago both already having clinched playoff spots, meaning that the Marlies are in tough against these two teams. If they lose those two games, things are looking rosy for the Hamilton Bulldogs so long as they get the job done. The caveat being the game against Milwaukee. Milwaukee not in a playoff spot, sitting with 78 points. They, too, just outside of the bubble for the final playoff spot. But they could cause trouble, but it's an opportunity for the Marlies to get one. Now, if the Marlies get a single point, I believe, just one, they will find themselves in the playoffs. Now, that's the dangerous part. For their work, the Hamilton Bulldogs have done what they've been able to do. Let's just put it that way with what they have.
Yeah, and you're talking about a team that was stripped down to near nothing. I mean, Greg Patterin right now with the Montreal Canadiens, of course, as is Jacob DeLaRose, two key components that were helping them through the middle part of the season where the Hamilton Bulldogs actually saw their most success. Now at the tail end of the season, of course, they're missing that offensive upside on defense. And so you're starting to see the result of that because Jared Tenorti hasn't been able to really cut the mustard offensively.
Well, no, and the other problem about that is that we've seen some players come up to the Montreal Canadiens this season and play effective roles, namely Mikael Bournival and Christian Thomas,
right.
Sven Andrighetto as well. The problem is that when Thomas and Bournival went back to Hamilton, well, Bournival hasn't played. He hasn't played more than 12 games for the Bulldogs so far this season. Meanwhile, Christian Thomas hasn't been able to rediscover his scoring touch, sitting with 20 points in some 50-odd games for the Hamilton Bulldogs right now. The only guy who's managed to sort of have a modicum of consistency is Sven Andrighetto with 42 points on the year in 58 games. Hasn't had his best season, certainly played a hell of a lot better last year for the Bulldogs, but last year's team was one that was further depleted than the one that we're talking about right now. The best part is that moving forward, they continue to get an influx of prospects, recently signing Mark McMillan, I believe out of the University of North Dakota, a veteran in the NCAA who is ready to earn his stripes at the professional level, along with Brett Lerneau, who has come a long way in his WHL career. I believe Tim Bozon has even been recalled to Hamilton Bulldogs. So they're starting to get some of these younger and better prospects that have been coming up in the system under the Bergevin model, who are going to start to reach Newfoundland. It won't be the Bulldogs, but the Canadiens farm team next year. So while they're fighting an in the playoff bubble race right now for the last spot, next year might be a much better year where they secure a playoff berth a little bit earlier.
Well, that's all going to be contingent on what happens with a guy like Jerry Tenorti. But before we get to Tenorti, let's talk a little bit about Charlie Hudon.
A fantastic season
for Hudon down there with the Bulldogs. And it was in the running, I believe, for Rookie of the Year at a certain point in time because of the point production. That fell off a little bit of late.
A lot of it, unfortunately. A very hot first half for Charlie Hudon, running at nearly a point a game. I believe there were a couple weeks there where he was the leading scorer in the AHL, not among rookies, but among the entire league. As a 19, 20-year-old, very, very, very impressive. Now, obviously, that's tailed off, but when you come from juniors and you play a 60-some-odd game season and move into playoffs, it is certainly a different thing. Charlie Hudon playing in all 74 games for the Bulldogs right now. He's got 58 points. He's a +6 on the year, and he's been rather involved with 66 penalty minutes. Now, for a small guy, yes, we're going to get there. He's a small guy. He's very talented. He's exceeded expectations despite having high ones coming into the season. So he will look to be a leader next year for the Bulldogs and bring in some of these younger guys like a Bozon, who could really, really form an incredible duo with Charlie Hudon.
Not just Bozon, but there's also Michael McCarron, who may be up with the Bulldogs next year as well. I'm not quite sure. I think his junior years are done.
I'm not entirely sure behind that. I believe he still might have another one in him. Same with Nikita Sherbak. But that doesn't prevent the Montreal Canadiens from putting these guys in their professional development system once they reach the age of 20. The one rule in the AHL is that you cannot be a teenager and play unless you're from Europe, I believe. I believe Grand Rapids has dealt with that, being Detroit's farm system. And of course, Jakob Delarose with the Montreal Canadiens right now, well, he is 19, and he played with the Bulldogs this year. So there you go. I just answered my own question. Got to be from
Europe. You do that a lot.
You got to be from Europe to do that.
So Sherbak's from Europe, correct?
Yes, he is.
Okay, so in that case, do you see Sherbak possibly being with the Bulldogs next year? Because they're going to lead an influx of offense.
Now, this is where I do get confused. And, of course, this isn't our specialty here on Breaking Habs Radio. We don't break down the rule book, but I understand that Sherbak playing in the WHL negates that. Someone out there somewhere might provide us with a more cohesive response to how that's all going to break down. But there are decisions to be made on the organization side and on the player's side for all this to come through. But let's be honest here. McCarron and Sherbak are two players that the Canadiens are licking their lips at getting into the system as soon as they possibly can.
Absolutely. The Canadiens obviously looking for size up the middle and wanting to see McCarron's development, because this year he played absolutely fantastic.
I got a question for you.
Uh-oh.
Is there a player that maybe the Canadiens don't want to see enter their system? And I'll just hint at it being perhaps maybe a goaltender.
Are we talking about Matt O'Connor?
No, we're not getting there yet.
Not yet.
Okay. I wanted to start with the reason why we might end up talking about Matt O'Connor.
Oh, you mean Dustin Tokarski?
No, I mean Zach Fucale.
Oh, he's a couple of years away.
He's not a couple of years away. He is in the final year of his Q eligibility.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's going to be with the Bulldogs next year. Get
right.
It.
So the question behind Zach Fucale is this a guy that Mark Bergevin and company want to see develop with the Ice Caps / Bulldogs next year? Or is this a player that they might be willing to give up and hence pursue a goaltender in the guise of Matt O'Connor, who is now a graduate of, I believe, Boston University?
Yes, we'll talk about that further in the third segment, but yeah.
So, you know, you got to wonder where the direction goes with those players in mind. You bring guys like McCarron and Sherbak in as soon as you can because you want to see them develop faster. Pukkali's development has gone a little off the rails, has it not?
It has. It's not a great season this year. But that comes down to the fact that he changed teams. Of course, he famously won the Memorial Cup with the Halifax Mooseheads, went and won the World Junior Gold this year, and was traded to the Quebec Ramparts. And now the Ramparts are not the same type of team as the Mooseheads.
No Nathan MacKinnon. No Jonathan Drouin.
Well, yeah. That
I think that's the given, isn't it?
Yeah, but the Mooseheads have a better organization as far as development is concerned. When you look at the Quebec Ramparts, since Patrick Roy has left, they have not been a model franchise. So that's changed the whole dynamic in Quebec. So being able to develop players at that level, it becomes difficult. So I think junior players especially, they're at the mercy of the teams that they're with. Sometimes they end up with guys like the Hunters in London, and lo and behold, you know, the Hunters actually go out and speak to NHL teams, asking them what they want as far as the development of their players is concerned, as was the case with McCarron.
Excellent point.
Then you look at the Quebec Ramparts. I almost said Nordiques.
Oh my God. Not yet. We're not doing that show.
That's a few years away, but I don't know what we're going to call that show, but
I don't know. We'll have to figure that out after we do the Vegas version first. So
yeah,
we'll see where it goes.
We'll figure that out along the way. But yeah, talking about the Ramparts, I mean, their development model has been nothing short of futile as the years have gone on.
Okay. Now, that's at the junior level, and I think that's very interesting, and it was an excellent point that you made in highlighting the fact that, you know, the junior game isn't the professional game, and you're going to get lucky or you're not going to get lucky, depending on which franchise you do find yourself playing in. But at the AHL level, the way that the Canadiens have handled it under Mark Bergevin, especially over the last couple of years, we haven't necessarily been too overly fond of the coaching staff, the way the coaching staff has managed the players in the Bulldogs system. But at the same time, as the dynamic has shifted both with the Canadiens and the Bulldogs moving forward, do you see promise in the system that Hamilton plays growing and unleashing a little bit more potential? And I guess maybe we could say conservatively that the current one has held back some of the potential of players, namely a guy like Jared Tinordi.
Well, that happens at the pro level too, because if you look at here locally, I mean, we all clamor about the fact that Alex Galchenyuk seems to be held back to a certain extent. Now, whether or not that leash is going to go here in the playoffs remains to be seen. But when we're talking about a kid like Jared Tinordi, you look at that level in the AHL, and you and I, seeing it firsthand, agreed that it was much, much slower. The pace was much, much more methodical than it is at the National Hockey League level, where it's breakneck at every single turn. And so at the AHL level, there is room to develop. But the thing was, we saw Jared Tinordi making the exact same mistakes with the Bulldogs that he was making here in Montreal. And so the question that I have to ask is, if Montreal recognizes those problems here and transmit that message down to the Hamilton Bulldogs, so Ben Lefebvre and his staff really need to take a look in the mirror and say to themselves, are they really doing what's best for the Canadiens organization?
Well, I think that's the issue with Jared Tinordi right now, especially when you look at former teammates of his who are now regular mainstays for the Montreal Canadiens. Well, I wouldn't say regular mainstays. One of them is Nathan Beaulieu, and the other one being Greg Patterson. Now, the difference in what we've come to understand is that Beaulieu and Patterson have adjusted, but also bought in and accepted the roles they needed to take on to secure a spot and earn the trust of management. Tinordi perhaps has a bit more of a personality when it comes to this, defying it and still wanting to play his own game, very much his father's son in that regard. Maybe a bit of a bull in the china shop mentality, but we want to see more of a bull in the china shop playing on the ice as opposed to how he is handling his current situation.
But the thing with guys like Beaulieu and Patterson is that those are two guys that were offensively gifted and had to tone it back to learn the defensive game. Whereas Tinordi was defensively gifted, a big body, could skate, could hit, could play well in the defensive zone. They're trying to get him to augment his offense. And I think that's where he's lost in the shuffle.
Well, I think the other thing that we are missing out on here is one of the big things that they wanted him to work on, and despite this being something that he was complimented at draft time, his skating speed, his finesse and ability to skate. Now, they said they were going to give him time because he's a big guy and he's got to grow into being able to skate for his frame at the professional level. The problem is some of the decisions he has made and some of the responsibilities he hasn't you could say he's attempted to take them on, but he hasn't done so successfully to the point where management is trusting him more. So he becomes a bigger question mark. Much like Zach Fucali and his performance in the minors, or excuse me, in the juniors this year, not sort of turning any heads nor making management or scouting staff smile. But there's a lot more to look forward to, and that's the excellent point with Hamilton and the future team out in St. John's. They're getting better, and hopefully what will happen is the system will get better with them. Because like you discussed, you mentioned it before, the level of play can be dictated by the team that decides to dictate it because it's not the NHL's pace of game. So the Hamilton Bulldogs need to have an aggressive system in place to allow these kids to thrive.
Of course, you're listening to Breaking Habs Radio here on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. I'm Coach K, otherwise known as Costa Popolius, but nobody calls me that, joined by Stephen Hindle. And Steve, as we bring this segment to a halt and we get ready to go into our next break, let's take a look at the organization itself in Hamilton. Of course, they're leaving Hamilton, going to St. John's, a different dynamic. You and I both know that there are a lot more Habs fans or organizational fans in the Maritimes than there are in the Hamilton area. Of course, that being the hotbed of our favorite team to hate, the Toronto Maple Leafs. Is this going to be a healthy change for that organization?
It works in the favor of the Canadians being able to have a lot more control and say over how the team is run, of course, and that stems to the sale of the franchise by Michael and Lauer back to the Montreal Canadiens. So whereas it was a split joint decision where there were multiple consultations required and other things of that nature, now it moves into a situation where they have all of the pieces in place to do what they want. Does that mean the coaching staff stays? Potentially. But the other changes around it in terms of environment, team philosophy, team structure, and how the franchise can, for a lack of a better word, coddle these players, it gets easier for them. It gets better.
But I think the one part of a player's development that people don't realize, and we saw this in Hamilton, is the fact that when you're playing in front of thin crowds, quiet crowds for that matter, it's difficult to get up for a game. In the Maritimes, though, it doesn't matter where you look, be it junior or at the AHL level, they're crazy hockey fans. They love their puck.
Well, the history speaks for itself. You don't have to go too far back to find the Fredericton Canadiens among other junior teams.
The Nova Scotia Voyageurs.
That the Montreal Canadiens have had in their stead as their farm teams. They're familiar with the Maritimes, another reason why they're heading back there. And it also helps salvage a market that is in need of professional hockey out there. Of course, the Quebec Nordiques being a big question mark on the NHL's radar and fans everywhere, especially in Quebec City and out in the Maritimes. Well, having the Montreal Canadiens prospects situated in St. John's, that really opens up things for fans out there, for them to really delve into a team that they can sink their teeth into and become real fans of again. The other thing about this move, they're not moving again in the near future, 2 years in St. John's with an option for a third. We'll see where it goes after that.
That's it for our second segment. Coming back after the break, we're going to talk a little bit about NCAA free agents that are available out there. They're maybe on the radar for the Montreal Canadiens. And then we'll do a little bit of playoff talk, too, because, of course, the first round, well underway. 4 games tonight, 4 games yesterday, and some interesting developments. You're listening to Breaking Habs Radio. We'll be back.
With more Breaking Habs Radio. Everybody knows that particular situation. The date starts off really well. And then she asks that terrible question. Do you have a condom? But did you ever notice that you never have a condom when you need it? There is a solution. SOS Condoms Application. SOS Condoms will save your date in every situation. Wherever the place, you just have to locate yourself, and our teams will take care of the rest.
Oh, why don't we start with these small balls? With a soft side for lather and a rough side for scrubbing, this can make any ball sparkly and new. Go ahead and play with those clean balls, Denise.
Wow. Could play with these balls all day.
Can it clean these filthy balls?
Throw those fuzzy suckers down here. Look, cleans right through the prickly surface.
If you've got dirty balls that need cleaning, call now and you can get a free detailer. Or just visit the Axe Shower Gel aisle in your closest retailer.
Now, back to Breaking Habs Radio.
Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. I am Coach K, otherwise known as Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, because I'm suffering through a cold, but I'm sure you can hear that as I'm talking. So I'm allowing Steven to go and talk a little bit more than usual, although he doesn't really worry about talking too much, right, Steve?
I don't mind. I don't mind.
I'm sure you don't. I'm sure our listeners don't either, because, you know, we just try to talk as much as we can about hockey and make it interesting. And we're going to look at a side of the game that most people don't look at. Frozen Four, of course, just finishing off. Providence playing against Boston University. Providence winning the national championship in NCAA Division I hockey. And, of course, it's time to talk a little bit about NCAA free agents. And we're going to talk primarily about the goaltender who cost BU the national championship, and Matt O'Connor. An unfortunate incident for those of you that didn't see it, where O'Connor caught the puck, didn't really realize that the puck was in his glove, dropped it between his legs, and let it go into his own net for an own goal before Providence scored to win the tournament. The Montreal Canadiens are taking a look at Matt O'Connor. Now, we need to understand what the reason behind that is. Steve, you have a theory.
Well, I think that it just might be because they are not ready to move forward with Zach Fucale. And, of course, if you do look at the Hamilton Bulldogs right now, you have Mike Condon, who has emerged as the number one goaltender for them. They weren't expecting that. So that has been a little bit of a break for them. But there's no guarantee in Mike Condon's future, nor his performance. He will certainly get another shot. But the Canadiens, Marc Bergevin, namely, being the general manager of the Bulldogs and future Ice Caps, he is looking to insulate wherever he can. We all know he's a big fan of defensemen. Well, he's also a big fan of depth between the pipes. Carey Price, probably not going anywhere until he is good and ready. So there's no real panic button behind this situation. It's going to be a long time before anybody else sees time between the pipes, but that doesn't mean that the Bulldogs / Ice Caps aren't going to deserve quality goaltending prospects to help them have a run at some future championships. But the depth, it's all about having good players, and if you can always upgrade, then you go for the upgrade.
Of course, yeah, there's other teams out there that, of course, are interested in the services of O'Connor, namely Vancouver, which sort of threw me for a loop, because between the work of Eddie Lack and the fact they still have Ryan Miller under contract for a couple of years.
Don't forget they have Jakob Markstrom with the Utica Comet.
That's true, too. So, you know, you've got three quality goaltenders there. Of course, Markstrom not developing as quickly as some projected because Florida gave up on him.
Well, the interesting thing about that, Dan Cloutier is the goaltending coach for the Utica Comets. And one thing that Cloutier noticed this year with Markstrom's development is that he's played like an all-star game in and game out. Now, Utica clinched their division. They are well on their way to having themselves a very nice long run in the playoffs. But Markstrom had problems in Florida. He was expected to be a stud. Then he didn't develop. Now that he's with Vancouver's system and playing well in AHL, they're starting to think maybe he has a future. Eddie Lack, he's sort of like a Mike Condon in a situation where they sort of gave him the chance to take the ball and run with it. He did. He got better as he went along, but he's still not a sure bet. Ryan Miller entering the twilight of his career. This is a never-ending saga for the Vancouver Canucks in their goaltending situation, and it's a perfect illustration of why a guy like Marc Bergevin is going to go after a guy like Matt O'Connor, because stability is the name of the game. He's already building on what has become a very stable franchise in the last couple of years under his management. So if he can just keep building the walls up, the opponents are going to have a tougher time tearing them down.
Now, there are a couple of other NCAA free agents that I was looking at that I thought maybe might fit into the Canadian system, namely a kid like Casey Bailey. 37 points on the season, playing for the Penn State Nittany Lions. 6'3", 205 pounds, a right winger. Now, Montreal has been looking for a scoring winger and depth at wing for the longest time. Do you think Bailey could fit into the mold here in Montreal?
It all depends on how the prospects shake out for the Montreal Canadiens. And as we're talking about right now, depth is always welcome. So there's no killer here in adding a guy like that. But oftentimes with these free agents coming out of the NCAA, especially nowadays, they seem to have a lot more pull and sway in terms of what they want. Who knows where these guys are going to want to end up playing? The problem is they often want to make sure they have a chance at an NHL career, so they might not take a team where there's heavy competition for a spot. So you bring in a player like that, is it a Yuri Sekach type of move, or is it perhaps a bigger risk where the kid might be too young and too fragile to move right into professional play and he ends up with the Bulldogs and you end up with a prospect who doesn't pan out? It just seems like it's a bigger risk unless you have a spot open and ready for him.
And then
But the question is, Coach, do they?
They what?
Do they have a spot open for a player like Casey Bailey, a right winger, as you said, 37 points, 205 pounds. This is a guy who has the physique and the mold. Does he skate well enough for the Canadiens? Does he have a spot to fit into?
Well, I don't think the Canadiens are set in stone as far as the wing position is concerned. They're always looking to augment who they can get on the wing, and they're always looking to get younger, because the younger you get, the easier it is and more manageable it is under the new salary cap.
Well,
so that's an important part of it.
So let's take a look at a case like Kevin Hayes, who went from the Chicago Blackhawks to the New York Rangers right now, making a difference for the Rangers this season. These players have to make their decisions for themselves as well, which becomes a very interesting part of this dynamic. A lot of times these kids would just jump at whatever opportunity they have. A lot of them are getting more of a shot. So what is his decision going to be? We were just talking about Matt O'Connor. Well, he's seeing a number of teams. Why? Because he wants to see how it shakes out. And again, it brings me back to Yuri Sekach. Yuri Sekach saw 13 teams last year before he made a decision to come to the Montreal Canadiens. Do these guys like what they're seeing, and do they see a fit for themselves with the club? That's where Bergevin has to make the doors open wide enough for them to believe that they do,
Yeah. And
for them to believe that this is a franchise on its way up. Well, we know the answer is number two. That is, schedule is much heavier. Got to wonder about these prospects and how they handle things. That's why with this franchise and the way Bergevin develops the prospects, you look to a guy like a Bozon, who's about to enter his professional career with the Bulldogs, as perhaps being a player they'd lean on more. More to the point, a Charlie Hudo.
Well, let's move away from free agency now in the NCAA. Fall back on the NHL playoffs. Last night, four games. The other all-Canadian matchup yesterday, Vancouver versus Calgary. Thoroughly enjoyed that hockey game. I thought it was fantastic from both teams. A very well-played hockey game. And, of course, I'm a kind of particular to Bob Hartley and the Calgary Flames because, of course, I work for the Hawksbury Hawks, the Junior A team here in Ontario.
Bob Hartley's alma mater.
Exactly. He's the man that got that team back into the fold as far as junior hockey supremacy was concerned back in the day. And they're playing some fantastic hockey right now, a team with a chip on their shoulder, and they showed Vancouver what they're made of yesterday.
Well, they're also full of young guys willing to fight for an opportunity to taste playoff success. They weren't necessarily supposed to make the playoffs. We saw how the end of the regular season played out, and they made it by the skin of their teeth. But they love it. And they bought into what Bob Hartley has provided them in Calgary. thriving on being an underdog has been something that Calgary has always enjoyed. But this rebuild process that they've undergone, it's skyrocketing them further and faster than they expected. And Vancouver, on the other hand, if you talk about the Sedin twins for Vancouver, they're the only two remaining players on that club who last played in a playoff game for the Vancouver Canucks. So you want to talk about how much things have changed in Vancouver and Calgary in just a short time. It's just that impressive to see the changes. It's fun to see a series between these two teams with completely new makeups to the lineups, a new generation of this rivalry. And how's it going to play out? Well, Calgary with the quicker young guns, they seem to have it right now.
You're listening, of course, to Breaking Habs Radio on the Hockey This Week Radio Network. I'm Coach K, joined by Stephen Hindle. Let's take a look at one of the games that really surprised me yesterday, and that was the New York Islanders playing against the Washington Capitals. I expected the Capitals to bring a little bit more fight to the game, but again, like the Montreal game against Ottawa, it was the support players for the Islanders that dictated their superstars.
Well, the thing about New York is, like the underdogs of years past, they are thriving on the fact that they don't have expectations. The Washington Capitals, on the other hand, you're looking at nearly a decade of the Ovechkin tenure.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And it's a situation where they go into this with expectations, and heavy ones at that, because time and time again, they have been dubbed successors to teams winning cups, and they have not lived up to expectations.
But they didn't necessarily play a bad hockey game yet.
They didn't play a bad hockey
Braden
game.
Braden Holtby, though, was horrible.
Well, here's the thing. Yaroslav Halak was also quite excellent when he needed to be allowing only one goal.
His hand wasn't shaking while he was squeezing water into his mouth, like Ovechkin said a few years ago?
Listen, you know, Yaro was a teammate of Alex Ovechkin's last year. As a matter of fact, both goaltenders for the New York Islanders were Washington Capitals goaltenders last year, Yaroslav Halak and Michael Neuwirth. Very interesting dynamic to this series. It also lends to being a catalyst in the favor of the underdog Islanders over these Capitals. The Caps, they just deer in headlights mode when the playoffs come. And the Islanders, like I said, no expectations, because were they really expected to be here? I don't think so.
No, not really. But the Islanders, of course, a great story down on the island, playing fantastic hockey all year. Tapered off a little bit as the season wound down, but of course, showing that they're capable of playing good hockey going into the playoffs.
Getting ready to move to Brooklyn, too, is an exciting time. So it's nice that the segue from Long Island to Brooklyn includes a playoff run to round things out at the Coliseum. How far they go? Well, look, they've already got one win. We'll see where it goes from there.
And, of course, another great game last night taking place in Nashville yesterday, where the Predators got a 3-0 lead and let it slip away as Chicago fought their way back, taking the game into multiple overtimes and finally winning it 4-3.
An astounding game, and then the Chicago Blackhawks playoff machine has been turned on. Patrick Kane returning way before he was expected from a broken collarbone to factor into. And who scores the overtime winner? None other than Duncan Keith. It just kind of goes that way for teams with that experience. It's a factor for the Montreal Canadiens right now and how they're handling their series with Ottawa. Sure, one game in the books, but they have loads of experience in recent years compared to what the Ottawa Senators have. It extends to the Chicago-Nashville series. Nashville not necessarily to be expected to be where they are. The Blackhawks, well, they're never counted out.
Now, of course, I'm going to throw you a little bit of a curveball. Right now, you're watching one of the games going on, that being the Pittsburgh game.
The Pittsburgh game is over.
You're kidding.
It is over.
Who won that one?
The New York Rangers grabbing game one, of course.
That went fast.
It went fast because Rick Nash potted a couple goals in the first period.
With the flu.
And the team just cruised the rest of the way. I got to double check if there was an empty netter there, but I saw 2-1 as a final score. And yes, exactly, 2-1 there. Sorry, Rick Nash with a couple. My bad. Derek Brassard, Ryan McDonough with the two goals for the Rangers in the first period. Blake Comeau replied for the Penguins in the second. But this Penguins team, you saw it at the end of the season.
Reeling.
This is like a six-year-old on the slide. He's literally about to fly right
wearing a pair
off.
Of shorts.
Yeah, this is not going to end well. The Penguins not in for a long run, I'll tell you that much. Another interesting situation going on right now. the Detroit Red Wings and Tampa Bay Lightning duking it out with about 8 minutes left in the third period. The Red Wings holding on to a 3-2 lead with Peter Mrazek between the pipes.
And, of course, there's two games that are going to be going on a little bit later in the Western Conference.
More fun. One going on right now, as a matter of fact. 10 minutes into the first period, the Minnesota Wild have a 1-0 lead over the St. Louis Blues.
Doobie-doobie-doo, where are you?
We'll see how that goes. But, again, Devan Dubnyk, an all-star for the Minnesota
Absolutely.
Wild in the second half of the
story.
Season. Much like the way that this situation in Ottawa has played itself out. Well, Devan Dubnyk has also been the similar thing for the Minnesota Wild. And, you know, the St. Louis Blues, they cruised through the end of the regular season, one of the more dynamic teams and certainly one of the better teams in the West. But they are in for it with the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, and, of course, the game that we're looking forward to tonight is going to be going on starting at 10:30, I believe. The Anaheim Ducks and the Winnipeg Jets, of course, making their return to the league 3 years ago. And a great story for a city that long suffered to get their team back, got it back, and they supported 110%. That situation in Winnipeg reminds me a lot of the Green Bay Packers. The Green Bay Packers, though, being a community team, a lot more at the heart of their fan base. But the Winnipeg Jets, their fans would just never let go. And them being back in the playoffs, I don't care who they're playing, they're going to be dangerous.
Welcome back, Whiteout. It's going to be glorious to see. And yes, you know you're going to have fans there who were last there for the former previous edition of the Winnipeg Jets' last playoff game. They're going to be living it up, loving it. And we'll see where it goes. Of course, they're in tough against the top seed in the Western Conference, the Anaheim Ducks. But if there's anything Anaheim has shown us this year, they are mortal. They are not a team that was the best in the NHL. No, the New York Rangers ended up with that prize, the President's Trophy. But the Ducks, for as much as they were the best in the West, they certainly can go down at the hands of the Jets.
Wow. That hour went way too fast for my liking. We got to extend this show. Paul, if you're listening, give us another half hour.
There you go. I like that.
Man, this was fun. You know, it's the first time we're doing a show together, one versus one. And it was a blast. It went off without a hitch. And we'll bring you more of that as next week. Depending on what happens with the Hamilton Bulldogs, we're going to have Reed Dusty join us. Of course, he from Bulldogs TV. To go over either the post-mortem or the playoff drive for the Hamilton Bulldogs, of course, we'll have more news from around the NHL and especially the Montreal Canadiens. And we'll delve into a lot more moving forward. Stephen Hindle, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you for bringing me aboard the mayhem that is this Breaking Habs show we've started.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy, and we're going to get better as we go along, guys. Of course, we had a couple of technical glitches tonight, and I'm going to blame my kids for that. But nonetheless, moving forward, a hell of a lot more coming your way. Of course, I'm your host, Costa Popolius, otherwise known affectionately as Coach K. We look forward to bringing you more next week on Breaking Habs Radio. Ciao, everybody. Thank you.